Well, you heard Sarah mention it a second ago. Joining us right now on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line from azcardinals.com. You hear us cite his work very frequently here on the Burns and Gambo Show. He is Darren Urban, lead writer for azcardinals.com, and who's been covering the team for, I don't want to make him sound old, but it's been a very long time that he's been covering the Arizona Cardinals, and he joins us here on the Burns and Gambo Show. How you doing, Darren?
I'm doing good, Burnsy, and I'm glad you're back in the saddle here.
I appreciate that. Thank you. And thank you for reaching out like you did a few days ago. I really appreciate it. Before we get into your piece today on azcardinals.com about the free agents, just I know it hasn't been made official by the organization, but if it is to be accurate, do you have a reaction? What is your reaction to some of the moves that potentially were made today within the coaching staff?
I would say just at this point, I guess I wouldn't be surprised if there were some changes. I'm the one who actually asked Cliff the other day if there would be any changes or if his staff was going to stay intact. And he said at the time, you know, they were still evaluating that stuff. But, given the way things ended, given, you know, the state of some things, I guess I wouldn't be completely surprised to see a couple changes. And, you know, obviously wide receiver is a place where there's been some players that they want to have do a little bit better. So, you know, if something like this were to happen, I could kind of see that. But it'll be interesting to see exactly what happens officially and who might be in that role.
Evaluate that wide receiver position for me, Darren, because, you know, Hopkins we know is going to be here for a while and he's one of the best in the game. But then, you know, Kirk I don't think has taken that step that we'd like to see. Isabella, Keyshawn Johnson, you know, they haven't developed yet to the point where people would be satisfied. Butler's not even on the roster anymore. Where do you see their wide receiver group going forward?
Well, I mean, I do think that, one of the things that you saw near the end of the season, John, was the fact that, you know, they probably need some more dynamic playmakers. I know a lot of people want to talk about the play calling and all that stuff, and that's also, I'm sure, part of the conversation, but you know, beyond DeAndre Hopkins and maybe Chase Edmonds, who I thought had a really good year until he got banged up at the end, you're looking for some things. Kenyon Drake was good, but he wasn't as good as he was the year before. As you mentioned, it seems like Christian Kirk, he kind of flashed early, but he got really quiet near the end of the year, and he didn't take the step forward that people were thinking he was going to. And certainly the other two guys, Isabella and Keyshawn Johnson. I mean, Keyshawn Johnson was able to make a couple plays, but it's not like he is somebody another team fears. And of course, the Andy Isabella thing just hasn't happened at all. So I think they could use another dynamic playmaker on offense, and wide receiver would seem to be a spot where they'd want to look. And, you know, does that mean, you know, even looking at like 16th overall, would you take a wide receiver in the first round? Probably not, but I wouldn't completely rule it out either.
The phrase, I don't know why it's popping into my head, Darren, organizational concern. It's not exactly organizational advocacy, but it's in fact, it's probably just the opposite of it. What do you imagine the organizational concern is about Christian Kirk at this point? I mean, we're well into what should be, you know, a career that we would have expected more from at this point. Where do you suppose the concern levels are for a career that just hasn't evolved the way anybody would have liked at this point?
Well, I mean, I guess it would depend on how you're viewing it, you know, for now. I mean, if you're going to sit there and say, okay, this guy was a second round pick and he's got to become what we would hope a second round pick wide receiver would be, then you're probably very concerned. Because you're right. I mean, myself and Kyle Odegaard, my cohort here who I write with, I mean, we thought this was going to be a huge breakout year for Christian Kirk. And for a while there, it looked like it might be. But other than some of those splash plays, we just didn't see it. And there was a couple plays near the end of the season he wasn't able to make that I think everybody was hoping he was going to be able to make. Now, if you're sitting here saying, is he still potentially a valuable part of the offense? I still think he can be that. Because I do think he adds something to the offense for sure, but just maybe not as a number two wide receiver. And if you can get somebody on the other side of DeAndre Hopkins that can do some things, you know, at least scare the other team into not being able to completely bracket DeAndre Hopkins, and then maybe Christian Kirk, who knows, maybe he becomes your slot guy or something like that. I mean, of course, we haven't even mentioned Larry Fitzgerald. We don't know what's going to happen there, but that could be a possibility. So, again, I think it depends on how you're going to view this.
There's so many things outside of just player personnel that you know, that I looked at and I've talked about that, I, you know, just has to get better, right? Clock management, the penalties. They led the league in penalties, mental errors, accountability, the decisions that they make down distance, all of that stuff. How much of a factor do you think that's going to be for Cliff's improvement as a head coach in this league?
Well, I mean, all the things you mentioned are things that absolutely have to get better. And all those things, you know, potentially hurt them, in especially in the games that end up being really close. And, you know, that's something that you do have to get better at. I mean, I know there's a lot of fans that are frustrated about some of those decisions and what he's doing. I do believe there's a certain learning curve there. And you can argue, if you want, you know, that he shouldn't have the chance to learn on the job. But obviously, was the decision the Cardinals made was to bring in a guy that was probably going to have some bumps in the road in terms of figuring some of this stuff out on this level. So, you know, obviously next year is a big year for a lot of people around, and I'm sure Cliff is going to be one of them. And have to hope that he has learned from his mistakes. And the guy that I've been around for 2 years, he's somebody that would learn. And I do think that this offseason, I'm sure that'll be a big part of kind of his overall look back and figure out the places he does need to get better.
Darren Urban from azcardinals.com, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Darren today published on their website a very comprehensive, basically player-by-player rundown of, you know, this offseason expectations, free agency, you know, decisions that need to be made, and just kind of an overall thumbnail evaluation of every single player. I won't ask you to crystal ball it for me unless you want to. I'll leave that up to you. But in terms of the two players that pop the most when I read your piece, and I think a lot of Cardinal fans would agree when it comes to are they going to be back or not, is Patrick Peterson and Hassan Reddick. Are either one of those is one easier than the other to bring back? Is one more likely to be back than the other? How do you think the Cardinals evaluate those two big decisions going into this offseason?
Honestly, I don't know if one is easier to prognosticate than the other. And I think the big problem, guys, is the fact that the salary cap is going to drop so drastically this year when every other year it goes up. And this year it's going to go down significantly. So a lot of teams across the league, and not just this one, are going to have to be a lot more – they're going to have to be smart about where they spend their money and how they do it, because there just won't be the cap room to get some of this stuff done with players like this. I think in both cases, it's going to be about what the market bears. And you know, it only takes one team to, for instance, offer Hassan Reddick a giant deal for 4 years that probably this – I don't know if this team is going to be willing to match. And same with Patrick Peterson. Now, Peterson's in a different position. Obviously, he's older. He isn't coming off his best year. You know, I think he would like to stick around, but we'll see. I think that's completely market driven. And I guess in a lot of ways, so is Reddick. The question is, are you willing to tag a Reddick to keep him around? He proved to be a pretty nice pass rusher, but if you tag him, you're talking about $13, $14, $15 million just for next year to try and get another deal done. And I don't think they can carry a cap number like that too long with the way the cap's going to be. So you're going to have to get a contract done. And I think if you're going to keep one of them, I honestly think you got to find a way where you'd be able to sign that guy probably before he hits the open market. Because once he hits the open market, it gets a lot more dicey. And then, like you guys know, it just takes one team to kind of end things.
The Fitz thing is going to be interesting. I mean, usually he right around the time of that Phoenix Open, he kind of lets everybody know. He always takes a few weeks here. So I don't think that this drags out very long. I think it's 3 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks, because he usually, by the time he goes to the Super Bowl and does his stuff with Jim Gray, he's already made up his mind. So you're just, and I know nobody knows anything, but what would be a reason for him to come back? I mean, he was kind of, I don't want to say phased out of the offense, but clearly, you know, not contributing the way we're used to seeing him. I don't think they would pay him $11 million again. I want him to come back. But what would be a good reason for him to come back?
To me, there would be two big reasons why Larry Fitzgerald would want to come back at this point. One would be trying to get to that postseason. They were so close. They did not get there. they seem to be moving in the right direction. If they make some of the right moves and you can get to the playoffs one more time, I think he would desperately like to do something like that. And then I think the other one, and it's funny because Fitz is, whenever he does retire, it's going to be this quiet thing. He's probably going to announce it on Twitter or the Players Tribune or something. I mean, it's certainly not going to be some spectacle. But I think the other reason would be, does he want to go out where his last game was on the sideline in street clothes, where his last game that he played in had about, you know, 500 fans in the stands that were family and friends of staff and players, and there was not a crowd. You know, that would be another reason. You'd hope that there would be people there next year. I mean, those would be the biggest reasons I would see why he might want to come back. But you can make a lot of arguments, and you made some of them right there, Gamble, that, you know, maybe this is the time to walk away. And it's just so hard to tell. And I really don't think he knows. I know there was a lot of speculation there. He doesn't know. I mean, I think he might feel strongly one way or the other right now. But I think there's a reason he takes a few weeks, because I think, quite frankly, in the past, he's been close right after the season to say, I'm done. And then when he gives it some thought, he realizes he doesn't really want to walk away. So I do think this time off means something in the decision-making process.
Good stuff, Darren. Always good to hear your voice. Thanks for coming on. We appreciate it. We'll talk soon, okay?
All right. See you guys.
Got it. Right, Darren Urban, azcardinals.com. Good stuff. He joins us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Coulter Cadillac Tempe, experience the difference. Visit coultercadillactempe.com. When we come back, they are two of the most high-profile and important Cardinals free agents this offseason. We just asked Darren about him a second ago. What kind of dollar figures could Patrick Peterson and Hassan Reddick be looking for this offseason? We'll tell you next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
No, not really, because I know I haven't played my last game of football, you know.
Yep.
So at the end of the day, like I said, I know it's business. Whatever happens in March or April, whenever that time comes, that's what it's going to be. You know what I mean? I know I got some decisions to make for me and my family and my career and my future. And, you know, I'm going to have, you know, some time over the next 2 or 3 months to really sit down and think about some things. And like I said, we'll see what happens.
That's Patrick Peterson on his frequently referenced All Things Covered podcast here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Have you thought about playing your last game for Arizona? And he said, no, I haven't thought about it because I don't think I've played my last game in the NFL. That being said, Gambo, we just got done talking with Darren Urban from AZ Cardinals about this. This is one of the big-time decisions that's going to come down this offseason for this organization. I know he's not the player he once was, but there is still such a ginormous hole at cornerback for the Cardinals that if he goes, that this one, whether Patrick Peterson comes back or not, is a huge decision for this organization this offseason.
Yeah. You know, their defense, and this is something that he may think about too. Does he want to play in this defense? And I've never thought about it from this angle. I always think about it from the angle of, well, damn, man, I don't have anybody that's better than him. And I know he's not the same player, and you get frustrated watching him. I get it. I've been there. Me and you have both been there. 4 penalties in one game. Remember that 3 weeks ago? 4 penalties in one game. Like, we're all there. But, man, who's replacing him? Like, who are you going to get to replace him? We don't have anybody in-house. So, but then you think about it from his perspective. This defense that Vance runs is more of a version of zone and man-to-man. At times you're man-to-man, and at times you're zone. Pat Pete likes zone. Pat Pete likes, he likes, I'm going to stay in this area, and this is where I'm going to be. You know, so, you know, he kind of likes that area. I'm going to cover this area, and this is my area. You start getting man-to-man, you got to go run across the field. You know, we've got cuts. Me and Jordan played him the other day where he, you know, he talked about it. Man, if I stay here, I got to get better at that because I'm not, you know, running into linebackers and traffic and stuff. I got to get better at that. He might look at – he wants to play 5 more years. So if this defense is making him look lethargic or slower or not – he might want to go to a defense, a Steelers-type defense, where I'm going to play in his zone because I can still do that all day long, every day. Every day that ends in Y, put me in his zone. I got my area. I don't have to be as fast in the zone, and I could be physical in the zone because that's my area. And that's what he may look at. And I've never thought about it from that angle. But if he really wants to play 5 more years, he might be like, I want to go somewhere where I can look good. And I might not be able to look as good in this defense.
Jordan's got that cut you're referring to. How did you think you looked this season? Here's Peterson.
You know, I think I had some ebbs and flows, but I just think it comes back to not necessarily the position I was put in. I just feel like me as a man-to-man corner, and I know most teams understand how I play, I just feel like I have to run through a lot more traffic. So I have to find ways to, if that's something that we're going to continue to do, I have to find better ways on getting through traffic, running from those, from crosses. Because if you look at 9 times out of 10, the plays I'm getting beat on is just overs. But I'm in man and man, but all I'm doing is chasing the receiver because he's going straight to his route. Now I gotta try to find a way to avoid not only the other receiver that's trying to come over to pick me, but I got to avoid the linebackers and still try to get into my coverage. So I thought I had a okay season. I think I could have done better, could have been in position to make a couple more plays.
Well, here's what Pro Football Focus thinks. And if you missed it, we did this earlier in the show, and we talked about the offensive players. Pro Football Focus put out their top 100 free agents available this offseason. 4 current members of the Cardinals made the list. Offensively, it was Kelvin Beachum and Kenyon Drake. They checked in at number 75 and number 77. Patrick Peterson, defensively, checked in at number 71, the 71st overall best free agent this offseason, according to Pro Football Focus, based off of their grades. They projected that there are 13 cornerbacks that are better than Patrick Peterson as free agents this offseason. They had him as 14th on the list. And yet, Gambo, their prediction was that the Cardinals signed Peterson for 2 years, $25 million, 15 total guaranteed, 12.5 fully guaranteed at signing. And I'm not going to lie to you, I don't know if I'd be all that opposed to the Cardinals doing something like that just because they've done such a mediocre job of preparing themselves for this moment when they had to make a decision about Patrick Peterson. They're just not ready to make this decision because they don't have anybody young and upcoming who can take a spot, not even close to somebody like that.
But listen, now you start looking, and I started to look through this list, right? William Jackson from the Bengals at 17. Richard Sherman, he's too old. Desmond King with Tennessee, Shaq Griffin with Seattle, Troy Hill. You start to go through that list. And then, so, okay, there are a lot of corners out there. What's it going to cost? And is it a better fit? And I think that's what it's going to come down to. Is there a guy that's a better fit in Vance's defense than Pat Peters? Because this defense, again, it's fluid. It's a little bit of a mix, a variation of some man and some zone, and sometimes he's got to play both. Sometimes he's got to run across the field in man-to-man, and other times he gets to sit back in his zone where he's more beneficial. I think, look, if he prices himself, if somebody comes and says, hey, I'll give you a 4-year deal, knowing full well that you're never going to get to the fourth year, and I'm going to pay you this much money, and maybe the Cardinals are like, I'm not touching that, man. I'm not going to touch that for Patrick Peterson. And then they go out and they go sign one of these other players. Or they draft a guy in the first or second round. Or they do both. They sign a guy and they draft a guy. That's very, very likely could happen. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. But I am curious about the Pat Pete part of it now just as much as I am about the Cardinals part of it. They could always tag him. But if he wants to leave and go somewhere else because of the fit, you know, that's his prerogative. And he may end up doing that. And it might not be the money thing as much as it is that he wants to play 5 more years. And in order to do that, he needs to go somewhere where he could look better.
Yeah. Hassan Reddick, of course, is the other defensive player who made the top 100 for the Cardinals. He came in as the 87th best free agent available. And a lot of it had to do with everything we've said about Hassan Reddick all season long. The mystery. Who is he? Is he the guy he was the first 3.5 years of his career? Or is he the guy that he was the last half season of his career? Their prediction for him is fascinating. They've got him going to the Carolina Panthers on a 1-year deal for $8.5 million fully guaranteed.
A lot of guys are going to take 1-year deals this year. The prove it deals. A lot of these guys are going to take 1-year prove it deals. I truly believe that. And he might be one of those guys. Look, pass rushers don't go on trees, so it's possible that, you know, maybe somebody blows him away with an offer and gives him 3 years and a lot of money. It's possible. But there's a lot of players that, you know, that have that 1 year and don't get paid. Some do, but others don't. Go look at Marcus Golden. I mean, he had, for the Giants, he had like 12 and a half sacks. He didn't get paid. He didn't get paid. He had, look at it now, he had 12 and a half sacks for the Cardinals. Yeah, for the Cardinals, he had 12 and a half sacks. And then when he hit, you know, when he hit free agency a couple of years later, he didn't get any big money. He had 10 with the Giants. So it's just, you know, it depends on the player. You know, age is a factor. Desperation is a factor. And if somebody is desperate for a pass rusher, maybe they pay him. I think he's more likely to get a one-year deal. I don't know how much or where, but I think it's more likely he gets a one-year deal.
When we come back on the Burns and Gambo Show, the Phoenix Suns off to one of their best starts in recent history. Why? What has allowed them to get there? We'll talk about it next right here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. Phoenix Suns 6-2 on the season. Their best start through eight games since the 09-10 season when they started 7-1. Winners over the Toronto Raptors last night, 123-115. And joining us right now on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line to talk a little Suns basketball, our good friend from the Suns pre- and post-game shows on Fox Sports Arizona, Tom Chambers, TC, here on the Burns and Gambo Show. What's going on, Tommy?
Oh, just hanging out here in my redneck arena. You know, I just hanging out with you guys, man.
Do you watch the TV show Yellowstone? I figured that's right up your alley, man. A ranch and a bunch of farmers and beating people up left and right.
Yeah. I've hung out with a few Beth Duttons in my life, you know.
How about Rip, man? That guy's the best part of that show, that guy Rip. You got any friends like Rip?
Don't mess with me. There's going to be rips coming out of the woodwork on YouTube,
Well, we miss hanging out with you, too. We haven't been able to be down there at the arena for obvious reasons, but as soon as we are and we can be on with you and Tom, man, that would be absolutely our pleasure. 6-2 start for this team, and I think I'm curious to get your kind of perspective on this. For as well as things have gone, it seems to me, Tom, there are still a lot of things that could get better for this basketball team. How they're playing offensively, Devin Booker, the turnovers, it was better last night. How he and Chris Paul are kind of interfacing with each other. I feel like there's a lot that can still get better, and yet this is the best start we've seen them get off to in 10 years.
No, you're absolutely right, and they believe that as well. If you talk to Chris Paul or Devin, and last night we talked to Jay Crowder, that's all he said was, you know what, we're just improving every day, and we've got a lot of things we can get better at. And you just love that mentality. I mean, there's no satisfaction right now at all. Are they having fun? Absolutely. Just like we are talking about them. It's been a long time coming. But, oh, my goodness, they see it. They want to work on it. They talk to each other about it. There's no hidden anything. It's all out there in the open. Everybody's on the same page. And I expect it to continue. I mean, I really do. I mean, Eddie and I were talking about last night. We're so excited about it, but usually it's not one of those false, fake things. This is a real team. And Chris Paul last year with Oklahoma City with less talent was like, what was he, fifth seed or something in the West? I mean, so I just think we're going to continue to improve, and we're going to have some really fun times.
Yeah, and in the past, there was definitely some of that fake stuff going around over the last couple of years trying to find the enthusiasm when his team was winning 21 basketball games a year. I look at the free agents, and, you know, when you see players come in, and we've dealt with some duds, man. Trevor Ariza was, oh, what a disaster. We've dealt with a few of those that came here, took the money, didn't have the heart or the pride. These guys they got, these are A-listers right here, getting Paul and getting Jay Crowder and Galloway and guys like that. These guys come here and they want a ball, they want to play, they want to win. They're not here just for the money. You could tell that. These guys have playoff experience. So I think they did a real good job switching that button from going from players who didn't want to be here and signing them to players that want to be here.
No, you're absolutely right. I'm sitting here looking at my pig, thinking of how much lipstick I used to have to put on that pig. You know what I'm saying? Just every single day, just saying, okay, we're going to be optimistic here. And it got to be a downer. It really did. But you're right. I mean, what they did in the bubble started it. Other players started to see what they were about. Obviously, this arena, this new practice facility, you know, book, the mentality that they had. You see guys that are the consummate professionals, all-star, obviously all-world in Chris Paul and Jay Crowder wanting to come here when they had other options, obviously. This foundation is starting to come out of the ground now a little bit. You know what I'm saying? The foundation was built, and now you're going to see a really, really nice finish to these guys and what they're doing. And I mean, I can't say enough about them. It just seems like, you know, all of them, even, you know, Dario started playing well in the bubble last year, but since he's been back the last few games, he's really helped them as well.
We talk about defense, and defense has changed so much from, you know, when you played the game to now. There's so much more isolation going on. It's just different. You know, team rebounding is the individual rebounds. That's an old stat. Team rebounding is more important right now. But you look at it, and it has changed a lot. You need rebounds from everybody. I think DeAndre's presence is really being felt right there. I don't see teams driving on him as much, so size still matters. But with the isolation and the switching and everything that's going on, when you look at this team defensively, what are you seeing right now?
Oh, I'm seeing a team that was really good. We talked about them being able to switch last year. But now, you know, all of them are tuned in. I mean, Cam Johnson, who we didn't know would be a defender, is doing a nice job. Obviously, Mikel is super. Jay, you know, Devin is really picked up. He's leading the team in steals, even with a Chris Paul, who usually leads the NBA in steals. So it's a whole different mentality, a whole different way of playing defense. Like you say, Gambo, it's a lot of switching. Usually it's 1 through 4 switching, and sometimes even 5 switching, because now – guy like Dario can play center in this league when before it was like unheard of, but teams have just gotten smaller. They're playing their best 5 people, and it's just, it's changed. I mean, now with the defense, it another way it's different is we used to be able to hold people and grab people and, you know, sling people, and you kind of had to be real physical. Now you can't hardly touch anybody. So these guys have to switch. They have to move their feet, and having that length in arms, And that ability to switch, you know, quick, you know, because they're quick out there on the floor is just a nice thing. And this Suns team matches up well. I mean, they get even quicker when they go to the bench with Cam Payne. I mean, he's been doing a tremendous job, and Javon Carter. So I love what I'm seeing, you know, from top to bottom on this squad. And you're right, the NBA has evolved. We used to, like, we just wanted guys to shoot 3-pointers. Now it's like, okay, well, how's your 3-point defense, you know, when you're launching
right
40 of these things a game? So it's completely changed.
Tom Chambers from Fox Sports Arizona, Suns pre- and post-game coverage, and our good friend here is joining us on the Burns and Gambo show. Fill in the blank for me. The one player who has impressed you the most or stood out to you the most during the start has been?
Oh, man. That's a hard one. It really is. I mean, I was so impressed with Cam Payne because I didn't know that he had that in him. I mean, I love what this young man's bringing in that second unit. I mean, we got him. He was sitting on his couch before the bubble last year. And what he is a legit, solid, really, really good backup point guard to Chris Paul. Cam Johnson has been absolutely terrific. I mean, that guy's legit. And everybody was like, why are we drafting this guy? You know, kind of a thing. So those two guys off the bench have been spectacular. But Chris Paul is Chris Paul, and he's super. And Devin, he's super. You know, Jay is now getting himself in shape, and he's playing really, really well. So I just love the group. And Mikal Bridges has been, yeah, I mean, he's just taken the next step to where he's now aggressive, even offensively, looking for that 3-point shot. And on defense, he just has a really good time. He's fun. So these guys are good guys. They like each other, and they're going to play hard and hold each other accountable. So I'm impressed with the group.
What's the limit for them? What's the ceiling for this team? If the Lakers and the Clippers are the two best teams in the West, the Suns have beaten Utah, they've beaten Denver, they've beaten Dallas. I mean, is it possible that this could be a top 4 seeded team in the Western Conference?
Well, they beat the Clippers too, and almost beat them the second time. Came back from 30 down. So yes, absolutely. I mean, don't jump ahead of ourselves. Don't do this, don't do that. But I don't see any reason why this team can't sustain what they're doing. And then, like we said, even get better. They're just coming together now. So do I expect them to be there? I kind of do. You know, I kind of do. I mean, they've got to win 3/4 of their games to stay where they're at. And I see them winning 3 out of 4. I mean, I just see it because that's kind of what they are. Now, obviously, if somebody gets hurt, you know, you have to step up. But this team has a lot of depth. Guys that aren't even playing. Frank can play. You know, I mean, there's guys that can play. that aren't even seeing the court. And even Langston last night only played a few minutes. And Etuan Moore is a solid NBA vet who can play offensively and defensively. So they're built for the long haul, where if they have to rest somebody a night or two, I still believe they will be fine. But do I expect them? I mean, I have to be a little apprehensive when I say that, but I do. I just think this is what they are.
TC, you were coached by Paul Westfall for a few years here in Phoenix, and with his passing, I just want to ask you about what he meant to you as a player, what you thought of him as a coach and a person.
He is the best. I mean, every single day he treated people the way, you know, he expected to be treated. And he was a brilliant mind on the basketball court, you know, coaching and playing, as, you know, we witnessed a lot of times. I mean, he's the sole reason I came, not the sole reason. I liked Cotton and I liked Jerry. I didn't know them, but I knew Paul. And when he said that the Suns would like me, I knew him. I trusted him. I respect him. I'd hung out with him before. We had the same agent. I'd actually gone and worked his basketball camp down in Casa Grande. And so I knew what type of person he was. So I believed everything that was being told to me. So I came. And, I mean, Cotton was great. But when there was a timeout, Cotton handed the clipboard to Paul. I mean, he drew it up. But you talk about a man of faith, a great husband, a great father, you know, just a great friend. I can't say enough about Paul. He was a fan of the game. He was a fan of even watching our show. And we're going to miss him. And it was just, it's a sad, sad thing. I mean, it came on so quick and, you know, now he's not here. So we just have to, you know, pray for Cindy and the family and thank the good Lord that we knew him, because he was a tremendous human being.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate those great words about Coach Westfall, Paul Westfall. And we thank you for coming on for a few minutes. We look forward to when we can see you in person down there at the arena. Maybe one day soon we'll be on your pregame show with you. Okay.
I don't know if I do miss you, Gambo. I don't know. Sometimes it's kind of that love hate kind of thing with him. You know what I mean? It's
Man. I always say the nicest things about how great the pregame and postgame show is with Tom and how much I look forward to watching it on a Fox spot. I do. I think you guys do a great job.
What,
great chemistry.
I love seeing your animation when you actually get on camera. I'll tell you what, I don't know if TVs can handle it for a long period of time. You know what I mean? I don't, but anyway, I heard you talking about baseball earlier. I hope baseball, we can have spring training here this year.
I think so. I think we'll just have it without fans again.
Oh, well, then why have it? It just sucks. I miss that. But all right, guys, hopefully one day we'll get to normalcy here soon, huh?
Right, if you're taking a day off, I'll fill in for you. Just give me a call. Let me know. You need a day off, I'm in.
You know what? I will. I don't know if they'll allow that, but that's going to happen. I think you do a good job, actually. It'd be fun.
Absolutely. You want a day off, you call me, TC. I'll fill in for you.
All right. You and your
thanks, Tom.
Will be all over that deal, won't you?
They will be.
Thank you, Tom. We appreciate it. Tom Chambers joining us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sportsline, Coulter Cadillac Tempe. Experience the visit, experience the difference, I should say. Visit CoulterCadillacTempe.com. I'm sorry, I was still trying to wrap my brain around the idea of Gambo filling in for Tom. That would be something to see. It's been over 10 years since the last time the Cardinals did it. Could they really use their first-round draft pick on a running back? One of the most prominent mock drafters is suggesting just that, and we'll talk about it next on the Burns and Gambo Show. You have to go back. You have to go way back. You have to go way, way, way back.
Time machine?
To find... I'm sorry?
A time machine?
Yes, it is. It is a time machine. It's a DeLorean. It's a 19...
How far back are we going?
We're going back to 2009, Gambo. We're going back to 2009 with the 31st pick in the 2009 NFL Draft. The Arizona Cardinals select Beanie Wells, running back, Ohio State.
What a failure that
to
was.
Oh, my God. The last
That was such
time,
a failure.
The Arizona Cardinals selected a running back in the first round of the draft. You have to go back to Beanie Wells in 2009.
I actually still have his cell phone number in my phone.
Really?
I still have his jersey in my closet for some reason.
I got his cell phone number right here, 813, and I won't say the rest. But I got Beanie's cell phone right here. I don't know why.
You know, I'm sensing a poll question. Which is more pathetic, Gambo still having the phone number in his phone, or Jordan still having
the
jersey in his closet?
Both of y'all need to do some purging.
Seriously, guys.
It might be time to purge some of these numbers.
Clear out your junk. Come on, man.
I'm not sure the last time I actually talked to Beanie or sent him a message. Been a while. Wow.
Man.
What was his last year with the Cardinals? I haven't touched this phone number in 10 years, but it's still there.
2013, 14?
Wow.
I can't.
12.
12?
Yeah.
It lasted a couple
way
of years.
Too much credit, Bernsey.
Yeah, I know. I was giving him way too much slack. Reason why we're bringing up Beanie Wells, the reason why we're invoking his name, is Todd McShay, noted draft expert, insider, with ESPN, released his first mock draft today. And a couple things to mention, I think they're obligatory, but I think by now most people who listen to us know this to be a fact. Number one, mock drafts are very, very rarely actually accurate. Okay, so that's number one. And number two, mock drafts this early in the process are even more rarely accurate when it comes to these things. I mean, what was the mock draft? What was the one a few years ago where, like, in the first round they had
Robin and Mkhitaryan, number one?
Yeah, that's right. They had Mkhitaryan, the number one pick overall.
Mkhitaryan was the number one pick.
That's right. So take it with a grain of salt, okay? But he's got Travis Etienne, the Clemson running back, going to the Cardinals at number 16. Now, there's a variety of reasons why I don't like that. But, Gambo, I want to hear some of yours first, because I know you don't like it either.
Because you don't take a running back in the first round. You could get them later on. I mean, you can. You don't have to draft. I mean, the Giants drafted Saquon Barkley in the first round. How has that worked out? You get a quarterback later. You could go second, third, fourth, but you can get quarterbacks like that later on. You do not have to. Listen, these mock drafts, their sole purpose is to identify what's the major need. And they see Drake's a free agent, and they say they don't have a running back. So put a running back with the Cardinals. I mean, I don't know if it's a algorithm or whatever that word may be or what they do, but they it's a need thing. They base it on the need. And they're going to look at that and they're going to say, well, the Cardinals need a running back. Drake's going to be gone. They need a running back. So put Travis Etienne there. But I don't see that happening at all. I would be really, really surprised that is a dynamic player. I love him. But I wouldn't take a running back in the first round. Not when you have so many other positions that you really need strengthening, especially cornerback, even wide receiver. And, of course, the lines. You know, you can never go wrong, you know, drafting a good interior, you know, offensive lineman or a defensive lineman. Somebody can rush the passer. But I don't think you take a running back there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking. I just randomly, for no reason, I just picked last year's draft as an example. Now I know we could look at other drafts, and we could look at, like, the Christian McCaffrey draft, or you mentioned the Saquon Barkley. Certainly there are running backs whose resumes coming out of college would demand a first-round pick. But listen to last year's drafts, and I'm just going to – the first running back selected, and I'm just scanning the list, so if I missed a guy, my apologies, but I don't think I did. The first running back taken was Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
Yeah, he's
he
good.
Was – Helaire. He was the 32nd pick overall first round, right? And then in the second round, bang, here we go. Jonathan Taylor, 41st overall. And then it was Cam Akers, 52nd overall. J.K. Dobbins, 55th overall. And then it was A.J. Dillon, 62nd overall. And you see Antonio Gibson, Washington, really good running back for Washington. He was the 66th pick in the draft. I mean, you could just go on and play this game all day. You can find...
Well, you know what you could do? There's a guy that sent us a tweet, Sons of Anarchy. Said, these are the top 10 rushing leaders this year. The first round two, round five, undrafted, round three, round two. You know, it's the eighth best rusher that was a first-round pick. So you got to get to the eighth leading rusher in the NFL to find a guy that was a first-round. So the top seven rushers in the NFL this year were not first-round picks. And that's the point of it that I think you just have to make, is that you could get running backs later on in the draft. You could get them in the second round, the third round. You could find those guys. So I would not be in favor. And I love the kid. I think he's great, and maybe he'll be fantastic. But I would not draft a running back in the first round if I'm the Cardinals, unless I was on the verge of a championship, and that's the position that was my dire need right there.
Yep. I my friend, you and I are in total agreement when it comes to that. What else stood to you about Todd McShay's first mock draft of the year? Anything in particular?
I mean, no trades in this, right? So there's no trades, but obviously they're going to be. He did not have the Jets taking a quarterback. He did not have the Dolphins taking a quarterback. He had Zach Wilson, who I love and I think is going to be fantastic, going to the Falcons at 4. And then this is crazy. He had Justin Fields dropping to number 15 to the New England Patriots. And then he had the other quarterback was the North Dakota State kid, Trey Lance. They had him going to the Washington football team at 19. And then Mac Jones going to Indianapolis. He's the Bama quarterback at 21. But he had Justin Fields going 15th in this draft. Man, he just had the best game of his life. He was absolutely sensational in that win over Clemson. I've never seen him play that well.
Yeah, I was surprised that he had him going that low. He had five quarterbacks total in the top 21 picks, which is a very, very high number. I was looking more not at the quarterback position, but the cornerback position. Because to me, it just feels like I know it's a need-based thing, but, man, the Cardinals need to find a young corner in this draft at some point. He had three cornerbacks going before the Cardinals picked at 16.
That
scares me, too. And you know what scares me about it? Three going before the Cardinals at 16. He didn't have the next one off the board until the last pick of the first round, which suggests to me that he's got a drop-off. Like, he's got three guys that he thinks are good, and after that, nobody that's good enough to be a first-rounder until the end. That scares me because it suggests the Cardinals might not be able to get one of those top guys at 16 if that's the position they're looking
at. Yeah, you don't want to Tommy Knight this, man. You don't want to Tommy Knight this. Remember, there was two good cornerbacks in that draft, and then I think the Cardinals were picking ninth, and they ended up taking Tommy Knight out of Iowa. And he was okay, but he wasn't anywhere near the top two, which was Sean Springs, and I can't remember the other one. But there were two great corners in that draft, and they missed out on them, and they still, because they needed a corner, they took Tommy Knight, and they could have done a lot better.
When we come back, the Arizona Cardinals made some offensive coaching changes today. How, if at all, could those moves impact Cliff Kingsbury as he enters what we all think is a make-it-or-break-it season? We'll talk about it next. Burns and Gambo Show.